Mr. President, distinguished delegates.
የዓለም ጸጥታ አዋኪና ለሰላም ጉዳይ መሰናክል የሆኑትን ሁሉ አይነተኛ ችግሮች እዚህ ላይ ልንጠቅሳቸው እንፈቅዳለን።
Since the beginning of modern civilization, generations of weakness and inherited only conflicts of world wars. But behold the marriage supper of the lamb and bridegroom unto his bride. Then shall the earth's children know the true expression of one love. Then Mother Earth shall honeymoon in peace, forever eliminating aspirations, lust, and anguish of wars and rumors of war.
Innocent moving up in papers and propaganda spreading in the Sunday papers. Not even Superman could have saved him in the game house. Render judgment a place. And Babylon a gamble the union life like racers. And give them a uniform and a shame them in the praises. And now the clock has strike one on the amazing stars.
Can we do it? We can do it. We shall do it.
Boom. Tell them finna draw me out when the world government in a falling out. Only few months survive crawling out. Run left him colleague them sprawling out. Nearly dead. Ready to fill all him out and him to tranquilize.
Wow. And I just cut off the good part too. I like the front part because that's about what I'm going to talk about. And anyway, that is actually a song called Confrontation. It's going to be sort of controversial, I guess, this show and next week's show, which I'll explain. That was Confrontation, of course, for those who aren't aware, Damian Marley, man. Son of Bob Marley. Great musician. Really tells how things are. Anyway, welcome to When Pigs Fly. And this is Andrew Fetter. Thank you for all you are listening out there. I got a lot of things I want to talk about. A lot of events and a lot of things that are coming up on my show. Next 3 weeks, but let's go down. Well, let's say next week, on September 9th, I know I'll have a very controversial show. In fact, sort of confrontational as well. I know that many out there will be, wow, what? Be rather surprised, and many will not. And speaking of, because of what's about to transpire within the UN, when particularly a situation with the PA Palestine Authority heading to the UN, I think it's optimal that I just tell it how it is. And I'm going with pure facts and show you what the agenda and what's really going on. Not what you think it is, and all those hate mongers and bullshitters and all that stuff. And tell it straight up. And it's called The Myth of Palestine, The New World Order Agenda. And when you hear this show, you're going to see how the dots lined up and how looking things outside the fishbowl. And you'll see exactly why things are transpiring the way they are and what is really going on. And why it's being influenced the way it is. There's a lot of many layers why it's been what's going on over there, which I'll get into, but I'll also get in the very just straight up facts. I'll just go right down the line of everything. And then you'll see what I'm talking about. That's on September 9th. That's next week. So do catch that show. I also have another very, very special show coming up right after that on September 16th. With Carrie Fezza. She comes on my show. She's, of course, the intuitive and astrologist. She comes on my show every 3 months, on every quarter, you know, the solstice and whatever, you know, every 3 months, how you say that, astrology, equinox and all that. And she goes through her three-month analysis of our cosmos and what it will transpire. She has been highly accurate on every occasion. We look at our economy. She predicted what was going on. She got predicted within her astrological analysis of the presence to be. It's going to be interesting. I will have, I'll try to ask her if it's possible in the coming election during next year, but that'll be way down the line, of possibly doing an analysis of some of the candidates. In fact, I'll wait till actually, you know, toward the head till we see who's pretty much in there. I don't want to presuppose on candidates, but we'll do that down the line. But anyway, you do need to catch that show. That's on the 16th. She'll give us our analysis for the next 3 months. That's like from September heading into December. And for those out there that I'm telling you, you do check her out. Also, for out there, go check her out, get a reading, get an analysis. You can check her out at zodiacbuzz.com. And if you need any information, you can contact me, and I can always lead you there to her way. Again, also, coming up in, I will, for those who aren't aware or who are happen to be in the Los Angeles area, I will be having a class starting September 15th. And I know many of you have been wondering about there, but with the teaching, again, Kabbalah, is it be a class, 7 classes total. I know many who have heard me on my show in the past, and I've gotten into issues and specifics of the understanding of Kabbalah. I know many of out there have wondered what the universe really is and who, in fact, we really are. I believe with this understanding of a real Kabbalah, I will teach the universal concepts of Kabbalah's perspective and path, including spiritual concepts in relation to the universe, the soul, thoughts, healing, guides, karma, life and death, dreams, out-of-body experiences, which is called Merkava, the reincarnation understandings, and I'll be utilizing meditations and other metaphysical understandings and applications within the path of Kabbalah, including creating and manifesting. I will also be explaining and how the use of and what the understanding of numerology, which was came out of birth through within the understandings of Kabbalah. In my class, you also learn as well as doing a holy chant or a holy. It's also it's called a, more correctly an utterance. Again, there will be meditations in each class. There's again 7 classes. The meditation will, I believe, will enhance, protect, and help you visualize. And it'll also be doing. There'll be all different meditations uniquely for each set of the 7 classes, specifically for that particular class. They'll also help you develop your understanding of infinity and the non-thought, healing, manifesting, regression. I will do a regression. I will do a guide, an angel guide connection, much, much more, as well as helping you show a dynamic of how to go out of body, known as astral projection or Merkava. Now, this starts again on Thursday, September 15th. Every Thursday, there will be 7 classes at 7:30 p.m. So if you live in or know someone in the Los Angeles, please call Psychic Eye. The location is actually on Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, just east of Woodman. And the phone number is 818-906-8263. Again, that's 818-906-8263. I do have it posted on my website for Psychic Guy. Now, everybody, I want to get into the military industry complex. Now, the reason why I get into this, I had a unique discussion with someone who very close with, in fact, it was actually my son, and who happens to be in the Air Force. And he's highly intelligent and explains methodically of certain things, because they talk about, learn a lot of military issues, and myself having been in the same situation when I lived overseas in Israel. So I have a deep understanding of all the military understandings of why and what. But I think a lot of people have misunderstandings, whether they're civilian and never been in the military or associated with the military, and have no understandings of why, what is the military and what it does and blah, blah, blah. And what it is right now has transpired. And a lot of people are misinformed when they look at what soldiers are, and a lot of soldiers are misinformed themselves. What is going on, and particularly in the United States, but not just in the United States. What is the military complex? And there was a president, President Eisenhower, in 1961, ironically of all people, who was actually a great general, who laid it out exactly what the military complex and how dangerous it was becoming. And I'll get to you what that is, but let me read off this section in his famous speech in 1961. He said this when he was actually leaving office, for those who do not know history. And do, you can feel free to contact us, go up, Google the speech, reread it if you like. I'm only going to read a small area of it, which applies, I think, more in content. But I'm going to read word for word. So it is actually, these are his words. A vital element in keeping the peace is our military establishment. Our arms must be mighty, ready for instant action, so that no potential aggressor, may be tempted to risk his own destruction. Our military organization today bears little relation to that known by any of my predecessors in peacetime, or indeed by fighting men of World War II or Korea. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no arm in its industry. Really, that American makers of plowshares could, with time, as required, make swords as well. But now we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportion. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security more than the net income of all United States corporations. The conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economical, political, and even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil and resources and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert, knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. Akin and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industry military posture has been the technological revolution during the recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, costly. A steady increase share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor tinkering in his shop has been overshadowed by tasks, forces of scientists and laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the foundation of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research, partly because of the huge cost involved. A government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every blackboard, there are now hundreds of new computers. The the prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocation, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet, holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. So I ask, or perhaps you ask, what is the military industrial complex? Well, simply speaking, the military complex applies to the relationship between parties that are in charge to manage wars, the military, presidential administration, Congress, and companies that produce weapons equipment for war, the industry. The military industrial complex is an all too friendly relationship between defense contractors and government forces, or both receive what they are perceiving, looking for what? A successful military engagement for war planners and financial profit for those manning the corporate boardrooms. It can be viewed and seen as simply a war for profit theory. The idea of war for profit is absolutely nothing new in the realm of human history. It's gone on thousands of years and can be traced back thousands of years, where arms races and the power, for example, of navy ships had ruled empires such as the British, the Spanish. The arms race between the European powers, for example, from France, Spain, Britain, could arguably be a primal version of this same military industrial complex. The idea was that a country must build up and maintain a ready military, the largest in the world, so that it can maintain its own world understanding of world order or its world power. Centuries ago, such a military was necessary in order to protect aggression from neighbors. But in reality, these empires were for their own interest, such as the British and all colonial powers. What was their interest? Profit. Power. Now, not necessarily just to protect their own homelands. Now, these days, an invasion of American homeland may seem ridiculous and contrary to the building of a global community founded in trust and respect. You know, not many will probably argue over this, but in reality, the theory of mutual beneficial between relationship between these two, whether it's government and military industry, may not appear to be so far-fetched if they're backly in unison. It would be almost the understanding of a fascist realm. That is fascism, where a corporation and the government are working as one, which is found within almost every government. So, in fact, it is a fascist element of government. It is no secret that the defense industry profits most when a nation commits to a lengthy war overseas. You'll find many military will spare at no expense for a victory, because that's absolute. It makes also sense that they must tap into whatever resources they can in a defense industry to accomplish their mission, that is to, of course, win on the battlefield. And any pseudo-world dominance through the basic understanding of the form of imperialism, which I aforementioned, can be seen just as important to a military force as is protecting its homeland. I give you the British Empire. I give you even back thousands of years with the Roman Empire, Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, the Ottomans. I mean, go on and on of all the empires. The bottom line, war is good business for those investing in it. manufacturing, production, servicing. To the war-minded industry, a wartime economy is just as profitable as a growing one. In fact, it is a fact that the United States was in a depression even as late up to World War II. And as soon as World War II came out, the U.S. came out of the recession or depression out of what? The war. But it could certainly pull you in one, right? Iraq. Which I'll get into. A wartime economy, and I'll explain why that is. A wartime economy, for example, is often, like I said, profitable. And it can be a growing one where ammunitions and shells and all that stuff has to be produced. As opposed to producing peacetime stuff like good stuff, you know, food, products that give people houses, clothes, even those basic necessities are more today's things, computers, gadgets, iPods. You know, one can just look back and just see what we need in reality of a list of manufacturers for what we need. And during what was being produced in the Second World War, you can see just what was the wartime economy, what things were being produced in lieu of other things. As they said in Eisenhower's speech, we went from plowshares to making, you know, rockets and guns and tanks and ships. Now today, America spends quite a bit of money on military. And the question is how much? People will be rather surprised if I told you how much. Maybe you won't be surprised. If you were to add all the budgets of the entire world for all their defense industries or defense budgets, whether it's Britain, the EU, Africa, Asia, Latin America, Australia, wherever, and throw in China on top of it, our defense budget in the United States is still significantly larger than them all combined. Think about how much billions is spent. And they're talking about budget, and it's a joke, by the way. Talking about budget, nobody will ever talk about cutting defense, right? Because it's called the military-industrial complex, which is, by the way, strategically done. You will find in every state, indirectly almost every county, somewhere military equipment is being built. And it was done for a purpose like this, not by accident in the United States. It was done so that every congressman or woman, every senator, even mayor, governor, every elected official is affected. Why? Guess what? If you pull back the military industry on one end or this here or close a base here and there or decide to cut down on buying something, jobs, that company just closed up. So most senators and politicians in the fishbowl effect are looking out for their constituents in one aspect because they need the votes and they need the jobs. Of course, there's the other one, of course. They are certainly being taken care of financially through lobbyists, monies that come in from the other arena, which we all know through like the Abramoff way. So they have different ways of getting monies, you know, for as far as the Senate and the politicians to influence them. But it is also another side of their votes. So they got them by the balls, as late George Carlin would say. So, before Iraq War, and this is what I was getting to, World War II, we got out of a recession. before the Iraq War, in fact, the United States, let me give you in the U.S. economy, was highly going quite well. We were actually coming out of our national debt. We were actually in the black in its current debt. In fact, debt was on a reversal until George W. Bush took office in 2001. He, in fact, inherited, we were in the black. It was a pay-as-you-go program is sort of what they were doing. That's what the Congress and Clinton did. They keep things in order. It was like, you know, they were doing it like average Americans would do in their own household. You only get so much income from what you're getting paid in from your job, and you only pay only so many bills and not use your credit cards. They start paying off their credit cards as the income is coming in and not using the credit cards. Same thing the government will start doing until the Iraq War. And that's when things changed. Look how many billions every day was to not just the war, the occupation itself of Iraq. Every day, how much was spent and lost. Oh, well, we just lost so much money over here and so many there. And they didn't even phase them. You know, you see it on the news, corruption, this and that, contractors, Halliburton getting their kickbacks with Cheney and all that. We all know that, right? Nobody really did anything about it, did they? Why do you think? Because they're all part of it. Every single congresswoman, man, even if they yell they don't like it, that's all for publicity because they're all getting something for it. They need somebody to scream about it. So Eisenhower called it the military-industrial complex. Let's look at the situation with Vietnam. Why and what happened in Vietnam? Why were we really in Vietnam? It was simple. It was the industry making money. More bullets, more ammo, more helicopters. Let's make some new stuff like napalm. Let's make some Agent Orange. Now, the military complex also works by creating the boogeyman effect. So we need new weapons. You know, it is ironic that we find out from the Soviets, as much as after the Soviet Union collapsed, we find out through their documents, it's all there, that they were actually afraid of us, the United States, I'm speaking of, or NATO or whatever. The British, because basically, actually, that's the real runners of U.S. policy, but that's a whole other thing. But that was the issue. They were, like, looking, you know, to find a boogeyman always. The Soviets, so we got the arms race, right? So they were actually afraid of us, so they were building their arms, and we were building our arms. So it was a boogeyman. As soon as they collapsed, we needed a new boogeyman. How long did it take till we had a new one? Al-Qaeda, wink, wink. Now, they're a threat, and they did some stuff, but I won't go into 9/11 because we don't know there's both. I think that, yeah, Al-Qaeda did do one thing, but obviously they didn't lay the bombs and discharges in the lobbies of the two towers or blow up the other building, building number 7. So I think they were sort of like stooges in a way, and timing, and where, you know, we all know what that is. But that's part of the boogeyman effect. And the boogeyman was in Saddam Hussein. And we're always finding, then it was, you know, Gaddafi. We're always going to find a boogeyman because that's how it keeps it going. And that goes from both sides, on all sides, which I'm going to explain. The boogeyman is now being paid off. There's industry complexes not only in the United States. It happens on both sides. Those who are against the United States, they're part of the same military complex on a different relationship, and you're going to see how it's being banked from both the same people to keep it going. So, why does it seem that just when also when we're about to have peace and it's about to prevail, hell breaks out consistently. In the United States, for example, since World War II, the United States has been in a conflict almost every year. Go right down the history. We've been somewhere in a war or conflict or done something somewhere around the world. And you're going to ask, why is there always a conflict in the Middle East too? Asia, South America, not even with the U.S. involvement. Well, sort of, yes or no, let me put it that way, or British involvement. But I'm saying there's a reason why there's consistently conflicts around the world. And why, if there's a conflict, it's like there was a movie called, I think called The Internationalists or something like that, about, which I'm going to get into the banking thing connection. But it's who wants the gain? You want something that people buying weapons on both sides, so they need the money to do that. So, like I said, who is really, really benefiting from that? Who are the real players behind the military industrial complex gambit? Because the military complex gambit is really nothing new. Like I said, it's been going for thousands of years. In fact, you know, I mentioned Rome and so on. Alexander the Great. I mean, it goes back even time of Egypt. You go in the east, it goes back through the China, the first emperor. I can go on and on, you know, wherever you are in Africa, there's always some kind of military complex, you know, wherever it is. Aztecs, they all built weapons. They're all Native Americans. They all had when they were into a war, there was always a military industrial complex to some extent. And the wars that they were ensued, by the way, could have been used. Obviously, religion was used to go to people and manipulate them. Just as there was religion used to place king and queens because they're on the throne by God, right? That's how they were placed there. Who gave them the power? God. So that's how religion gave them the authority. And if you don't believe in God, the king, then you don't believe in God. Get it? That's how they did that. But they also, even today, religion is being used. Look at the Muslim countries right today that it's being manipulated to hate and kill. That's what? Producing what? Arms and bullets. And who's making those bullets and arms? The military-industrial complex. Get it? Who's requesting it? A good example is what's going on between Israel and the Palestinians. You know, people go, oh, well, the U.S. is supplying Israel. Well, then who's supplying the Palestinians? There's a reason why this is happening. Oh, we'll give you some rocket launchers, but now we'll give this one some better rocket launchers against those rocket launchers. And then we'll throw a little hate in there to keep it going, so then you'll constantly need to buy more military stuff. And it's not just in Israel and the Palestinians. Look at Lebanon. Hezbollah, the Iranians, the Iraqis, Afghanistan, Lebanon, Sudan, Libya right now, Morocco, Tunisia, Jordan, every single country in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Yemen. I go down the list. All those, they got to buy those guns and bullets. They need those weapons. Conflict. Conflicts are manufactured for a reason. Get them to buy guns, buy bullets. You know, I'll give you an example. Here's why I tell you, you know, things are manipulated. The PLO was literally wiped out of Lebanon in the 1980s and sent back into Tunisia. There was relatively actually peace in the 80s, and after that, in West Bank, there was no problem with the Palestinians there at all. What started it was the late 80s, almost 90s, when Shamir was pressured by, guess who, George Bush Sr., to go to the Madrid conference. There was absolutely no reason for this. Literally, the U.S. and the EU pushed Israel into an accord called the Oslo Agreement Accord in 1993. So look what's happened since 1993. How much violence, death, bombs on both sides had happened. Let me ask you this. What did you think Yasser Arafat did when he first got the billions in 1993? What did he first do? You think he got buildings and schools and infrastructures and a thriving economy? Hell no. Because he was part of it. So I'm going to talk about that in next week's show. He bought arms and he was told to incite more hate. So guess what happened in there? Boom, kaboom. You think they were going to have peace in 2000 when they met? Hell no. Why? What happened right after? Another infidia. Then there was another violence, more arms, defense, military, complex, people in tension. Oil goes up, by the way. That's just from that instance. From the world at large, you can see what's going on. You know, Iran is simply another vessel of a military industrial complex. They're trying to build the bomb. Oh my God. Well, that puts us, everybody else in the world, scared, so they got to get some technology to stop them. And they're the same thing. They're doing the same thing. They're telling the people, well, see, they want to get you. Although the Zionists and the U.S. and Israel and everybody's after Iran. They're so peace and loving. So we have to protect ourselves. So that's why we need to build our military. And we're going to show them. Get it? It's to keep it going. But they have to buy that somehow. And then where do they get the money to buy it? Yeah, oil? It's just not straight cash. They go, here's some money from my oil. I'll explain how they do it. Because they do not have the revenue to buy arms that much, that fast. They're broke. I mean, with all the thing, Iran actually has to send out its oil to get refined. They don't refine their own gas. Chavez is no different. He has been building his military complex. The boogeyman is the U.S. He keeps on telling the people, so we have to build because, you know, he's going to be overthrown. He's going to be overthrown. So he buys his stuff. And then the countries around him, let's say Colombia, who doesn't like them, or they have problems with militia or I call it terrorist militia or whatever that are trying to overtake Colombia. Oh, we got to get more arms. So they buy. I mean, you can look with some I've seen, you know, which is amazing. There's another thing. I saw some really retarded posts regarding making Gaddafi a great guy, helping his people. I saw this on some people posts, and I was like, what? He gave everybody health care and housing and all that stuff for his people, right? But there was a little, like everything, just Hitler did the same thing. He was really good to the Germans. But then there was the other side, you know. He also, if you didn't like him, he killed you. If you didn't like him being in power, you're dead. And then, of course, he sent out his little terrorist stuff all around the world and supported a lot of terrorism. You know, because he was part of that complex. This is why he's basically part of the same thing. He was building his military industrial complex. And there was, by the way, no way he could build that military complex. It didn't come out of his oil. He had to borrow the money. The billions he has is no way fast enough to supply all his people, do all that stuff, what he was doing, da 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 da. And at the same time, that's how he was giving loans, by the way, with no interest. Because their oil was paying the interest off the loans that they were borrowing. And what was happening in that military complex of his, for example, they were selling hate and murder worldwide. That was producing another thing. He was part of it. The Koreas, for example, are part of the same military complex, both of them building up against the other. The African military complex, Congo and Sudan and whatever other countries. The Somalia right now has been going on for how many, whatever. You can go to India and Pakistan. I mean, all the Middle East countries, from Morocco to Egypt to Israel to Hezbollah and Lebanon, to Jordan to Kuwait and Emirates and Yemen, Iraq, Pakistan, Iran, Afghanistan, India. This is just through the Middle East up to India. Look at the military, Asian military industrial complex. Look at NATO. Who the hell is NATO fighting right now? NATO was the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It was set up against the blockade, against the Soviet bloc. There's no Soviet bloc, so why is it still there? Well, they still have a huge military complex, don't they? They have a bigger buildup since the fall of the Soviet Union. Did you know that? How much money is really needed worldwide do you think is required to manufacture all these military goods? You know, there is a movie, and I highly recommend it. Did I use highly too many times? It's called Why We Fight. And you would think, well, that movie like that sounds like it's about, you know, why we fight, like a military. We're going out there and we're going to fight, telling the, like a propaganda film or whatever. But it really gets into the real issues of why, and it's really set toward Americans, by the way. But it applies, I think, worldwide, because they also are involved with it. It's not just American thing, it's actually a British thing as well, and you're a world thing. It doesn't matter, everybody's involved with it. But if you ask average Muslim Americans why we fight abroad in wars or why we have bases all over the world, most of them would say, oh, we're fighting for liberty, we're protecting for liberty. Who's liberty? Why do we have a bases in Germany? You know, I can see, okay, Korea, because they're defending South Korea against North Korea or whatever. Why do we have a base in Qatar? Whose liberty are we protecting there? Why do we have bases all throughout the Middle East? Why do we have bases everywhere, even in, you know, the Pacific and, you know, look at the naval bases all over. We have more naval bases than anywhere. Nobody even knows about those. And then there's some of the secret Air Force bases that are around the world that nobody really knows or would do, but they don't want to talk about. So who's liberty? I mean, you'll find every single politician, whether Democrat and Republican, you always use this word. They don't say the military is there to spread freedom. They've done that. I mean, Bush has done that to the average Joe Blow, who's sort of ignorant, or basically general public, who's just sort of naive. But they always use this one significant word. It's in our interest. Or they'll say the policy is in our interest. When they get mad at Israel, they get mad at the Palestinians, or they get mad at whatever, the French or Turkish or whatever. They'll say, well, it's not in our interest. It's not in America's interest. Gaddafi is not in our interest. Doesn't talk about peace. What the hell is our interest? What the hell is our interest? Money. That's all it is, about our profit, our influence to have money. But whose interest is Americans? Is it the average American's interest? No. That's just a synonym. That's basically the bullshit show. It is in their interest, but not America's interest. It's in a select few interests. This is a hint of who and why we are fighting. It's not for American interests. It's not for the UK interests. It's for their interests. And who are they? That's the bigger picture. Well, let's go back a little bit and hit some things. Let's look at what is and how the complexity of which is ain't so complex, the military-industrial complex, and how is really what it really is. You need to go back to history to some extent to see how and why we have what we have today. If you go back to the Napoleonic Wars, for example, you'll find that's really where being, I got an idea by a couple families who happen to be bankers. Well, first of all, the well-known Rothschilds, who, by the way, real name, again, is Bauer. They're German, not Jews. With their colleagues later, and they hooked up with the Crown of the UK, who happened to be German, financed both sides of the war in the Napoleonic English War. So, you know, the English and blah, blah, fighting each other, boom, boom, boom. You know, they also fought the Austrians, so they're on that side, too. So they were playing games. And after the wars were over, England, you know, Napoleon fell eventually. But guess what happened to England and France and all the countries in Europe? They were in debt. They borrowed this all this money to protecting themselves and fighting for themselves. They had to pay that money back. And they didn't have it. And that's where the Rothschilds, the Bauers, known for, actually Rothschild comes from, means red shield. It's what daddy had on his door post. And the Windsor family, whose real name, by the way, they're German, are actually the House of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha, which is German. They actually changed their name to Windsor during World War II because of anti-German sentiment. So they're actually German, not English, not British. By the way, that's, I think that's maybe why they had to marry, Prince Charles had to marry Diane. She was the real line. She was a Brit, a real Brit, from the line of Spencers or, I forgot now, but the real line. Now, you'll note after the Spanish-American War, which is really interesting, that war produced arms and the interest for the United States, and they had to pay off their loans. So suddenly the private bank was loaning money to the government. But in 1913, conveniently, the Federal Reserve Act was in place. And then what happened after 1913? 1914 was when World War I kicked off. Now both bankers, with the common interests, being the Morgans, Rockefellers, which were holding the Fed, and the Windsors and the Rothschilds were securely under control of Bank of England, were in fact financing both sides of the war. Yep, they were financing both the Germans and the English. How are you going, huh? You mean the Bank of England was financing a war against themselves? Yes, they were. Fact. They did it indiscriminately through different various ways. Back then, they didn't have computers, so it was like really easy to do that. They had transfers things going on, which I'll get into the Bush family, how they became very, very wealthy because they didn't do electronic banking. That came out of World War II, but they actually were the link between the Rockefellers banking the Nazis. So you'll see how that was going back and forth. All the weapons, by the way, were made, which are made, meets a military complex. Obviously, they profit. But they borrow this money, the governments, and they have to pay the banks off. But again, who are these banks? Like I said, and you guess it, all the banks are the Rothschild, the Bowers, the Windsors, the Morgans, Rockefeller conglomerate of banks. They may have subsidiary Wahlbergs and other ones, and Italian, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Those are the, you know, the four conglomerates. Like the big oil companies you hear about? No, it's the big bankers. By the way, the banks own the, have control of the oil companies. They're the ones who, they're sort of hooked up with them. Now, after war, all the wars, after these countries were now in debt after those wars, like never before after World War I, look at Germany and the EU countries, and even the U.S. was actually under pretty much bank, you know, owing tons and tons of money to those banks, like the Federal Reserve Bank of England, they had a problem. And, of course, the Brits, after World War I, went on an oil splurge, and they needed all that oil, and they had to somehow use their empire to control the Middle East with the U.S. on its side as her new bitch. By the way, the U.S. lost its sovereignty when the Fed Act was enacted, because, like I said, who owns that? The Crown and the three deciders or CEO of all these banks, which is the Crown. So, in effect, that's what basically happened. The Rothschilds and Morgans are more of like the being the board of directors of the conglomerate with the Queen of England and the Crown, Queen today, of being the CEO. You'll carefully look and see, by the way, who created the League of Nations and later the UN. It's right there, Rockefeller. In fact, the UN, by the way, is on land that was donated by Rockefeller. If you look at the charter when it was implemented, who wrote it, it was written by the CFR, the UN, Council of Foreign Relations, and who was head of the Foreign Council of Foreign Relations was Rockefeller. Hello. Anyway, that is who and the what, who is ultimately profiting from all this, or more correctly, gain power in the illusion of fractional banking or fraud as it is in the worldwide. So here's the game. Keep making conflicts. Make people hate and divide. Keep that killing going, especially keep on that fear of them, the boogeyman, or fear of them. And some will need to buy products from military industrial complex. And when they do that, they're going to need the money and ultimately borrow money somewhere along the line from a bank. And who are the banks? Or leading to the banks of all banks? The Federal Reserve and the Bank of England. Now, many of you say, oh, come on. The Bank of England was nationalized in 1947. I said, oh, I'd love this because somebody asked me that a long time ago. Oh, really? Tell me, who selects and delegates who runs the Bank of England? Parliament? No. Your Prime Minister? No. The Crown. The Crown selects and delegates who runs the Bank of England. It's not voted. And they have their meetings aren't public. Ever thought of that? Uh-oh. I mean, they have private meetings. They have people who are appointed by the Crown of England. So if I actually owned a business, it would be like, I'm going to say, who's my employers? That's the reality. The Crown still owns it. It's a charade. Read the charter of the bank. Oh, you can't read the charter. There is none. Because there was never nationalized. It was a hoax. On paper, it was for the people to think it was nationalized, but it was, in fact, never, never nationalized. It is a private bank run and owned by the Crown. Always has been. But I think the Crown has never been, you know, they say it's all superficial and it's not really a government, but it is. The Crown actually signs off on every and all, you're a constitutional monarchy, meaning the Crown has to approve and sign off on all policy. Like a president, a veto. So who runs the country? Who runs the bank? Who's in authority? And since they are the top CEO, they also control what the U.S. is doing. So as much as we won in 1776 and 1913, we gave back, they lost 13 colonies, but then they just gained some 50 colonies. And eventually became 50 some odd colonies less, because they didn't have that many then, but you get my drift. So you see the conflicts in the Middle East, like Israel and the Palestinians, and the Sunnis and Shiite, and so on, are all manufactured in order to make in policy of the military industrial complex, so more is bought, then more is borrowed, until the debt just grows and grows and grows. And then, of course, we have to have a retraction of austerity. The banks say, you know what? Pay us back. And then the government said, oh, we don't have the money. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? He says, well, okay, this is what we'll do. We'll take some of your assets. And that's the retraction. That's austerity. That's when they start centralizing their power. This is what happened, by the way, in 2008. The banks go literally, that was all set up. It was set up to shut down and centralize. Banks started closing. You saw the banks start collapsing. It wasn't that they were collapsing. They were taking over the assets of these banks who had paper on other assets. It was the whole idea. It was taking over. It's like you build your house. You work so hard to build your house, and you're making your payments. And guess after your hard work, and you saved all your whatever you did on your house, bank goes, okay, guess what? Now you haven't been able because you don't have no more work. I'm taking over your house. We want it now. And they just got that house. They own it. By the way, you can stay there. We're going to own it. We're going to lease it to you now. So it's basically creating a serfdom eventually. That's the ultimate gain, by the way, a serfdom. I think somebody wrote a book about it, and it's really true. That's a whole other thing. But now the question, what can you do about this info that I just explained? I mean, really, what can you do? Well, one of it is just become aware, spread it. Spread it like you can, as they say, like the song. I mean, the more people are aware that we are being used and manipulated, the more they can make the choice or have a greater choice for all humanity. They become more aware of what the clerics that you hear, oh, that they want to kill and hate and blah, blah, blah. They're the same part of the military industrial complex. I don't care if they're Muslim, Christian, or Jew, or Buddhist, or whatever. Any clerics that's talking to you, hate, or division, or blah, 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 any mentality of that is virtue by gain, part of the military complex. Because remember I told you, religion is used to manipulate the people. I mean, religion has been there. Constantine created Christianity to unify Rome. It was used to manipulate. As much as people think how great Muhammad was, it was actually, look what the vast empire of the Islamic power was spread. It was out of getting people to believe in what they did. It was not for the people to believe. It was to, what? Control people. Actually, both between Christianity and Islam has been that element of it more than any other major religion, actually. So, the late George Carlin once said, politicians don't just make policy and decide for our country or our countries. The real owners do. And you ain't an owner. And they know it. And now they got you by the balls. How so true? You know, Thomas Paine had once said, and I see this a lot, it's one of my favorite quotes, reason obeys itself. And ignorance submits to whatever is dictated to it. I mean, Thomas Paine had said that, and he is so right on. Think about it. So just don't believe whatever's told to you. Even what I'm saying, go check it out. But use your reason. Use a real understanding of things. Step out of that fishbowl for once. Look as it come to look at Earth as if you're looking at outside, if you're an extraterrestrial outside and go, wow, this is humanity. If you look on that way, you'll see how fucked up how we are in humanity by we're playing this prison planet bullshit and what is really going on. And I don't like to say them because them is part of us. Those banks are part of them. Those bankers, the Rothschilds, the Windsors, Bowers, Morgans, they are part of us. Whether you're Muslim, Jew, Christian, you were all the same. Or Buddhist or Hindu. We are all the same. It's not them. That's what they want you to do, thinking them to create division, therefore create conflict, create hatred, and buy more arms all of a sudden. And then borrow money to pay for those guns. So I hope you understand and remember, we aren't sheeple, we are people. As Damian Marley said from his song, since the beginning of modern civilization, generations have witnessed and inherited only the conflicts of the world wars. But behold the marriage supper of the Lamb and their bridegroom unto his bride. Then shall earth's children know the true expression of one love. Then Mother Earth shall honeymoon in peace, forever eliminating the aspiration, lust, anguish of wars, and rumors of wars. That is such a beautiful prose. But our thoughts are what create and manufacture the elements in our universe. Our thoughts, the way we look at things, create our world. We are what we think, and all that we are arises with our thoughts. We are our thoughts. With our thoughts, we will make the world. Buddha. This is why division is so important to the Bauer, Rothschild, Windsor, Rockefeller, Morgan gang. They want you to feel division, separated, having a separate God, having being separated from nature, being separate from each other. If you realize how we are all connected to each other, to Mother Earth, to the universe, then we realize how pathetic division, hate, fear really are. We realize the system of banking and the monetary is simply uncivilized, in fact, barbaric. We realize that we have the ability to use free energy for all humanity, like John Searle electromagnetic generators and other electromagnetic systems, or solar or wind or geothermal or Tesla towers. We as humanity can move beyond these times of hate and division and fear, and the illusion of separation will just be that, an illusion. It is so really simple. Imagine this isn't a dream. This can be a reality if we choose. We can and have the ability to choose. So, as one great man had said, I think his name was John, imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It's hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living in peace. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us. The world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. And like MLK had said, he had a dream, but I say we have a dream. And my dream is the reality. Nothing to imagine. It isn't what we are. No fantasy here, because we always had the choice. With our thoughts, we change the world. We are our tongues. We create our worlds. With our minds, we realize the world. And with our hearts, we feel the world. We are all one. One universe. One consciousness. All connected to one another. Connected to God and connected to the universe. And with that, I want to thank you all for listening. God bless you all and have a glorious, glorious weekend. Thank you. Namaste.